Aaron Sorkin, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
There have been other innovators in history who have captured the public's attention, but I'm not sure that there's been one who people talk about as reverently as they do Steve Jobs. Why do you think that is?
That was one of the first questions I wanted to answer. I didn't know much about Steve Jobs when I took this. I took this job just coincidentally a few weeks after he had died, and I was really struck by the enormous outpouring of mourning and eulogizing that went on that I hadn't really seen since John Lennon and had never seen for a CEO of a corporation. He managed to make things, make products and devices, machines that we have an emotional attachment to.
I want to play a clip from the movie. This is a conversation between former Apple CEO John Sculley, who's played by Jeff Daniels, and Steve Jobs, played by Michael Fassbender.
Why do people who were adopted feel like they were rejected instead of selected?
I don't feel rejected.
You're sure?
Very sure.
Because it's not like the baby is born and the parents look and say, nah, we're not interested in this one. On the other hand, someone did choose you.
It's having no control. You find out you were out of the loop when the most crucial events in your life were set in motion. As long as you have control, I don't understand people who give it up.
Throughout the movie, you seem to be honing in on this idea that Jobs was adamant about being in control. Is control something that you think people who are visionaries like him really need to have?
I think so. He certainly needed to have it. What he called end-to-end control of all his products, which basically meant that his products were not compatible with anything else. He believed that he knew best and he didn't want you messing with his stuff. I can identify that. You know, now that, you know, we're at a point where movies can kind of be interactive, you can take a movie of mine, you can take A Few Good Men, and you can cut this scene, rewrite that scene, make yourself Colonel Jessup in the courtroom. You know, I cringe when I think of that. So I'm able to identify with how Steve felt.
When you're telling the story of a real person, can you talk about how you consider telling the story literally and being true to the beats of a person's life versus telling a thematic story about the person?
Sure. There is a big difference between the properties of people and the properties of characters. They have almost nothing to do with each other. Same thing with the properties of a human life and the properties of a story. People don't speak in dialogue. Their lives don't lay themselves out in a series of scenes that form a narrative. That's something that a writer does. So when you're telling a nonfiction story, you're well aware that this is going to be a painting and not a photograph.
This is the second big tech titan you've tackled in a screenplay, of
yeah.
course, with The Social Network and Mark Zuckerberg. Did you find similarities between these two guys?
I did. In the case of Mark Zuckerberg, I felt like he invented something that he needed. And it turned out, you know, a billion other people needed it too. In Steve's case, I think that he invented things, or at least marshaled the forces that invented things that were likable. You know, there's a moment in the third act of the movie in a scene between Steve and Woz, who's played by Seth Rogen. And Woz says to his old friend Steve Jobs, "The things you make are better than you are, brother." And Steve says, "That's the idea, brother." And I think in both cases, Mark and Steve, they were trying to make something that's better than they are. Again, I can absolutely identify with that feeling. The characters I write are smarter than I am. They're smoother than I am. They're more polished than I am. And I would rather people think I was like them than the sort of awkward person you're talking to right now.
Well, let's talk about dialogue for a second. You're, of course, very well known for the words your characters speak. When you're writing those scenes, do you read them aloud?
Yeah, I'm playing all the parts. I'm very physical. I read the parts aloud. There was one night when I broke my nose writing because I was just getting very excited about a scene and I was acting it out. And in the scene, the character was supposed to lunge at somebody while two of his office mates held him back. And I did the scene, but I lunged. There was nobody there to hold me back. So I slammed my face right into the bathroom mirror. If it had been a Scorsese movie, he would have said, "Cut, let's go again, this time a little less blood."
What was that for?
It's for the newsroom.
The newsroom.
A scene for Jeff Daniels, yeah.
So when you're reading that dialogue aloud, what are you listening for?
The first thing I'm listening for is, are these words speakable? Did I just write I love you like the moon and the stars and the sky. Did I just write something that an actor is going to have to overcome for it to not sound horrible? But the second thing I'm listening for is the musicality. What the words sound like is as important to me, not more important to me, but as important to me as what the words mean.
You, of course, have written many famous lines of dialogue, of course. You can't handle the truth. It's a great gift to be able to come up with a line like that, but the curse, I suppose, is that people are repeating it back to you the rest of your life. What's that like for you?
Not much of a curse.
Really?
If that's
I always figured it'd be like a band having to play that same greatest hit song.
No, a curse is you've been turned into a frog. This is really flattering when a line becomes part of the lexicon. And the only time I can remember getting frustrated was "you can't handle this Whopper" for a long time was Burger King's ad campaign. And I love Burger King. They have won me over with the flame-broiled Whopper. And I just really felt like I should be able to go into a Burger King and say, you know, I wrote the billboard that's outside there. Can I have a Whopper? But then I realized, you know, I can have a Whopper for $1.19. So let it go.
Aaron Sorkin, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks a lot for having me.